a little bit about the history of the agriculture and the things that I've lifetime here. Probably the first thing to say is I'm 85 years old, and I've lived in this same house for 81 years, and was born here in Amber in another house. We moved here when I was about 4 years old. Now, my father wasn't in farming at all until he retired from the milling company, which is a Grand Round Grain of Island City, and they had warehouses in Ambler and Elgin, Union, LeGrand, and so forth. And so when he got married, he came to Ambler as the miller for the plant here. And at that time, the wheat that we were raising, that was being raised here, was the flour was being sent to China mostly. It was the export market at that time. And then they had some domestic brands too that they were sold here, because most everybody in those times bought their flour by the sack or the barrel, one sack, four sacks or so, enough for the winter. And so how I got started in farming was the fact that there used to be probably 40,000 head of range sheep here in Union County, and they would be driven down the roads and say it's taken to different pastures and places and the hills. And I was given a little orphan lamb that didn't seem to have a mother when they went by here, and the drivers gave it to me, and I had it here where we live now, and raised it up on a bottle, and about the time it got up close to 100 pounds, it fell down the hill where we had it staked out right out at the side of the house and choked to death. And so the next year, I felt so bad about losing this lamb. But the next year, the folks bought me a couple of ewes with some nice, good registered sheep from Jim Dobbin and LeGrand, and that started me out on my 4-H projects. And as I mentioned, we had no farm grounds at that time, and so they took, in the later years after my father retired from the mill, we bought some ground here at the edge of Ambler, and so I first had just 2 acres where Dale Eismager just moved from down here, is where I handled my 4-H projects. We'd milk the cows down there, 2 or 3 cows I had, and bring the milk up to the house and take and separate it, and then carry it back down that evening to feed the hogs and such as that. And always had a big garden and things like that, chickens to live on. And then we gradually went into some farming. He did, but my dad, he wasn't a good farmer, we just can put it that way. He was a flour miller. And so one of the places, the Arnoldus farm over back to Somerville, is probably the first ground that I had. And the FFA teacher here in Ambler and myself, we went to Newton College, he and his wife, and we rented that little place, and his wife had wanted a fur coat. She wasn't used to this cold weather climate. And so his second year that was to be here, we rented this farm over there, a small acreage, and then he left for a better job, and so I came up at the farm. And so the first $1,000 I ever made farming was on this little piece of ground over, which is across from the Ralph Frizzell farm over there. And then after we went over there and milked cows one summer, and we had to harvest some peas there. Like I just mentioned, the first $1,000 I ever made was there. And I bought my first tractor with that $1,000 I'd made that summer there off of the peat crop and milking the cows. And I still have that tractor. I may try to get the FFA to kind of restore it for me. It's in real good shape, and it's been stored all the time, and I may bring it out and see if the boys might want to work on it this fall. And girls. I better put girls in there, hadn't I? And so that is, then from that, I bought one place. And my father never wanted to get big in farming. He always said the small farmers are the ones that don't go broke. Back in those days, have some cows and some hogs to feed and some cream check coming in, you do better and you will be being a big farmer. And so most of my places are scattered from different parts of the this end of the valley, the north end of the valley, that I farmed for my lifetime after I came out from college. And we've raised everything on these farms from the way I actually put it. We've raised most anything that we think we can make some money on is about the way it's happened. We've raised string beans, and we've raised spinach, and we've raised carrot seed, and we've raised grass seed, which is our wonderful crop here. And I've been in on the grass seed from the time it was started here in Union County. And I'm Howard Wagner, Dale's grandfather, is the one that came in here and started it. And we had the concrete storage there. And we stored he put his grass seed there in the summer and the fall. And then he'd have it cleaned, and we'd put apples in the warehouse in the fall and the winter time. And so that's the way it started. And I could tell quite a few little stories about how the grass seed got started here, but that's been, and it's in a publication that is made by Dale's daughter, Michelle, that is available. And so we won't go into talking about that now. But Ambler first was kind of considered to be the apple county, the apple king of the United States, because the first ones that came out came from New York to settle here and started the apples. And I've been told that it kind of started from a tree that was lived way back in the northwest corner of Somerville toward the Jim Lloyd place, that there's a tree that had some beautiful apples on, and a picture is taken that, and real estate dealers in the Grand advertising in New York, and that's the way the apple industry got started here, because Charlie Bingaman, who is no relation to the Binghamans here now, came out in about 1910 from New York, and they were quite wealthy people, I would say, but because we have a lot of these things that I have here in my house now are some things that they brought out with them from their mansion in New York. And they built the concrete warehouse here in about 1912 for an apple storage. He and the banker, Walter Stringham, who is the president of the bank here in Ambler, probably financed it or helped finance them. The two of them built that storage. And that was kind of the start of part of the apple industry here in Ambler. And then later years, my father, after he'd retired, brought out the Charlie Bingaman's interest, and he moved up to Willow Lake then. And what he foreseen for Willow Lake in about 1920 or so is what it is now, that the roads weren't good, and he went broke there, and we lost our farm the same way, because when he needed money to pay for Willow Lake, we didn't have money to pay him for the farm we bought of him. And so a banker came in and bought the farm, and we were back to 2 and 3, 4 or 5 acres of farm ground here then.
So when Grassy came in, what year was that, around the same time as the apples?
No, the apples went out, and then the grass seed came in later years, probably several years after that. The grass seed at H.L. Wagner, I'm not too sure, is about in the late 40s or late 1950s. he came in and started the grass seed industry here, and we were still in apples, and the H.L. Wagner drilled the first irrigation well here in the valley, and I think it's the one where Dale lives now, and it's still being used, and that was probably almost 50, 60 years ago that that well was drilled, and it, at that time we thought it's an artesian well. You might drill one and move 10 feet from that one, and you wouldn't have that crack in the ground, and you couldn't find another one for where. And so, and about 12 years later, after H.L. Wagner drilled his well, Ted Sador, who was our county agent, was in college at the same time I was. We did lots of barnstorming, brainstorming together about how to make some money and things here in the county, and we then turned down the county had on dams for the Grand Round River and Catherine Creek, and so not all the farms are on the river, and so those farms that weren't didn't have irrigation, so Ted and I worked out a deal where I furnished the ground, and he was able to get the Dewis Area Manufacturing Company in Chicago to bring a well drilling rig out here to drill a well. And they were going to the Imperial Valley in California first for a fair or such, and then they didn't sell the rig there, so they came back through here in Union County, and we dug this well there on my place. They were doing the drilling for nothing, and I was furnishing the expenses of everything it cost, and we came up after about a couple weeks of drilling of a 500 dry foot hole. And so the demonstration that they were to have had to be camped. Well, they moved from my place and went out to the Cases out to Alisal, north of the, or south of Alisal, and drilled another dry hole there 500 foot deep. That is as deep as they let that well driller rig go. And so no water. And so that ended that. But the next year, a junker rig came in from the oil fields in Oklahoma, and those boys, they'd drill just as long as they could hold the rig together with some welding rod and some baling wire and things like that. And so we came in with that and drilled a new well on my place and came up with this well that's about just under 1,500 foot deep and an artesian just like the H.L. Wagner well. And then these two wells were 5 miles apart. So the farmers in between Wagner well and my well decided, well, hey, they ought to be water in between, all that ground between. And so that started the development of water wells here for the farmers. And then after one or two wells are found close or in between our two, they started drilling around. And now that the county, I would guess, would have probably 30 to 50 of these deep wells now that are irrigating. And that really has made this valley because, and I think the drilling of these wells, I'll get some dispute on this statement, or the fact that the wells and things over in Umatilla County, the big circles, and the Columbia River water being pumped miles, that they kind of came up and did their, and started their irrigation after we started ours here, where we found out we could raise our wheat yields from 30 to 40 bushels an acre to 100 to 150 bushel an acre, and our grass seeds from 400 to 1,000 to 2,000 pounds an acre, and these irrigation wells have really made the agriculture in Grand Round Valley. And the other thing is, I would say, I never did get started. I always liked the livestock, and I studied that at Oregon State, and I came back and bought the place over at the foothill where Ron Dake is now, and for 40 years I had that for sheep and purebred Hereford cattle on it, and But we kind of let that go toward the end of the time that I had before I give it to Oregon State College as a gift to our grass ground that we had here around the end. It was making us more money in the livestock, so I concentrated more here than I did on the livestock for those crops. Now then, I'll just take a breather here and see what you might want to add to harass me.
So when you were in getting involved in your 4-H, like, how did that work, and like, what was the big story about your 4-H?
Well, my experience in 4-H were fantastic, and I can't say enough for 4-H, and going down to the state fair in about a week to receive a award on this 4-H work that I've helped. I've given over 70 honor scholarships to students in 4-H and doing things and a lot of other things too. And so I started out with it, and we were, the 4-H is different back in those times and different from the FFA and things like that. And going down to the state fair, we had a freight car that we loaded here in La Grande, and we'd taken to build a deck on that freight car. Union Pacific would park us one there for a week, and we'd build a deck in it. It took about a third of the car, and over that deck we'd put our hay and our straw and our grain that we needed for our animals that we're taking, and then under the deck we'd put the sheep and the hogs, and we had three barrels of water to water them, because it took us 2 or 3 days on the freight train to go down. And I think for 9 or 10 years we did that every year to go down, and it was always quite a lot of fun. There's only supposed to be one attendant on the car, the livestock going down, but there used to be at least 4 or 5 club members of the ditch up in the attic, or we might have called it, on our deck. And we got kicked off of the freight team by the railroad bulls, as we called them in those times, in Pendleton, and we got kicked off of them in Portland, and we had to hitchhike on down to the fairs, and if we couldn't make it, we'd take use our spending money to buy a bus ticket or something to get down there by the time the freight train got down there to be unloaded. And the other thing is kind of funny, we always really tried to have a big Holstein milk cow or Jersey milk cow with us on the train, on the freight car, and if we run out of the goodies going down that our mother fixed for us, we had some milk to drink until we got there, and if we spent all our money at the carnival and things like that, and didn't have much money to eat on coming back home 2 or 3 days on the freight car, that we could get a couple of loaves of bread and had some good fresh milk. And money was just scarce enough back in those times that we even sold, had paper cuffs, and at the state fair we'd sell the city kids from Portland and Salem that came out, would last the milk for a nickel, and milk the right fresh for them, and do things like that. And so 4-H class, that started me out, and we went on. And after I got out of high school, I went on, and I didn't go to college for 3 years, and I spent quite a bit of that time worked at the sawmill in La Grande, Bowman Hicks, and did 4-H work, fed my 4-H cattle, and did that on the nights and mornings. And then in the 4-H, my later years, I got this national award in leadership, and that opened up a lot of things. I made 2 trips back to Chicago and to the National 4-H Congress, and then since college and here, and I never got married until I was 70 years old. And since that time, after I've retired, we've made probably at least 30 trips to China, and in and out of Hong Kong, airport both ways five or six different times, and the same way with Heathrow and London and New York. And so we've really seen a lot of the world since then, but our agricultural crops, our main things here, the main ones that have been given to the farmers of Union County is the grass seed mostly, and that's really a good one. And now then it's been changed over to mint, and we did have a market by trucking to Melton Freewater for green peas, canary peas, and spinach and things like that, but that's all dried up, and so we're now mostly on our own, and we have quite a few like Billy Howell and Rondack, and they're using and Dale Wagner, they're growing different crops like mint and flower and flower seed and different things like that, carrot seed, onion seed, that are our newer crops here now.
And like sugar beets and stuff?
Sugar beets is another one, yeah, that's a good one to add. All right.
So what kind of things do you remember most about, like, going to school in this area?
Well, yeah, I remember...
When did you start school?
Yeah, I remember quite a few about that. I started the school here at Embler because we lived just about a block, two blocks from the schoolhouse. But I didn't go to high school here. I went to LeGrand High School. And my folks have kept teachers here for years. And they were smart enough to realize that the Embler School at that time didn't have enough subjects. They didn't have any algebra, geometry, chemistry, or anything like that. And the teachers, I think there's only three in the high school then, they were maybe language teachers and couldn't spread out on different things. And so I went 4 years to high school in LeGrand then, and I had quite a time getting to school. I bummed rides, and I had some grandparents that lived in LeGrand, and if I couldn't get a ride home or something like that, I could stay with them if the weather is bad. And so I graduated from LeGrand High School, and just so people won't get the wrong idea that several of them have, they say, well, I had the big head, wouldn't go to Embler to high school because it wasn't good enough, but the thing of it was, in LeGrand, I was able to take algebra 1, 2, and 3, geometry 1, 2, and 3, trigonometry, chemistry, and what's the next one after chemistry?
Physics.
Yeah. Physics, yeah, physics, that's the one, and of course of that. And without those courses, I had never been able to get through Oregon State College if I hadn't have had those to start with.
Yeah,
and so now then, the Embler School has a lot of those different things, and the computers have changed it quite a bit. And the other thing, when I came out from at Oregon State, but when I came back home and started farming, we had an old team of horses. I probably shouldn't say horses, should say plugs, because they were ornery and old. You had to pound them and have a lot of nice words to give to them to get them to work it in. So from that, I just developed my farming here from that.
What about your early childhood and going to school and
then
things
in the community here? Well, yes. Embler was in a different community, and I don't believe I've mentioned this. At that time, the Legion Hall here was the center of everybody's enjoyment, or say, or their extra activities, and people from over the whole town would go down there on a Saturday night for a basketball, mostly town teams then, and there were dances held, and there was seats and things so they could have a show, a movie, and everybody went down there then at that time. And so I'd been here in Embler all my life, and so I just barely can remember those things. And the other things that I can remember here that might want to be going into farther on this, and I've got some clippings on my as the fires in the Ember. The one that we do have here today is the one when the flour mill burnt, and I can remember when the Legion Hall burnt. I can remember when the fertilizer plant burnt. I can remember when the grain elevator burnt, along with several different houses here were destroyed, and the different things that happened to them was fantastic. In fact, one big fire, I have an excellent clipping of it. It needs to go into history, and nobody really remembers about, I don't think, here now, is a big fire here in Ember downtown when the fertilizer plant burnt, and Charlie Richmond as mayor, they talked to the state fire marshal, and everybody in Ember was evacuated. Went around to every house and did, took every, all the ladies and children. Most of the men were out working someplace, and they were taken over to the cemetery because they were afraid that the whole town might blow up. And that empty fertilizer, 2 or 3 years before that, kind of a similar truck blew up in Roseburg that leveled a block or two, and it was just a truckload and not a large warehouse full. And so, but after about 4 or 5 o'clock, they were decided the fire that was burning and wasn't going to blow. And the Grand Fire Department came down with their big ladder, and I was able to climb up the top of that because I was furnishing them gas to keep it. They went and brought a couple 5 gallon cans, and that lasted about 10 minutes for their big pumper. So I was busy packing gas to them. And then from my well, which is north of Ember here, Burr Cartwright had the irrigation business in the Grand. He had a load of irrigation pipe that was supposed to go to Butter Creek and well out in Umatilla County, and so he called them up and wanted to know if they could bring that down to use in Ember. So we piped that water in from a well out here about a mile into town and down past the road and in through the fields and down the back street of Ember, and put a little booster pump on it there, electric booster, or not electric, but a gas booster pump on it, and and we had running water there, about a 4-inch pipe, and that kind of changed from having to truck it in to be pumped onto the fire. And the next day, after the fire died down and they didn't need the water, all of it, and to show the power of these artesian wells that we were irrigating from here, I was running at probably about a mile and a half by the time it got to where the fire was, and it had a booster pump in between, but it had been shut off. They needed a little water the next day there, put out a little extra fires that started, and they turned the water on, and it came from the pump without any electricity or any pump at all, because I irrigated for 25 years off of that irrigation well on 70 acres there without a pump.
What year was the fire and the fertilizer?
You shouldn't ask me that. I can't tell you right off. I've got it down, and you can find it easy. And I think probably the Royces would remember because they were the owners then. But I won't say what year it was exactly.
Okay. So when you were a small child, was there a church you went to in the city?
Yeah. The old Methodist church down here at the south end of Ember was in operation then, and I remember going down there, and Miss Van Blocken was a lady minister part of the time there, and she, I got a little bit of the Bible what she gave me yet when I was probably 12 or 15 years old at that time, and we went there, and I have tried on a time or two and some efforts and give some money to try to restore the old church there, but that hasn't happened. But we do have this really nice little Christian church here in Ember that I think I give them the first $1,000 to when they come around for donations on that, although I'm not a church member and I don't go to church. My wife does, and kind of a coincidence there. The lady, it's a minister in LeGrand now at the Methodist Church where she goes, was raised in Madras with her children. And so it makes quite a little tie-in that way. But I stayed away from churches. I try to be good enough without having to go to church.
So when you were young, medical care, how was that taken care of? Like, were there doctors out here?
Well, I was delivered here in a house that's still built up, that's still here in Embler. And they had a doctor here in Embler then, and he later went on to LeGrand, and so the medical committee kind of led it to LeGrand. Another thing, in one of the pictures that you have here, I mentioned about a girl, a lady that came with three of her children from Des Moines, Iowa, and pointed out that fellow's my father there, standing in front of the Embler store, and he was the druggist here at that time. And it was told that Sam Brooks, which is related to the Royce family, and that he was farming here then, or such, down in the, where the Huron and the Royce, and that would be the Huron and Brooks farm. Brooks is the other name I want to use, that he went and paid his way because he thought they ought to have a drugstore in Embler. He paid his way through Oregon State to be a druggist and come back to Embler and open a drugstore. And I can just barely remember that drugstore being here in Embler. All right.
So you talked about the fires, and there were a lot of fires in Embler, so the earlier fires?
Yeah, there were some big fires then because we didn't have any fire protection. And my father helped get the fire district here started, and I mentioned about the first fire engine. We did finally buy a fire engine that was a new Chevrolet from Goss's in LeGrand. It took over to Boise and had it built up with a pump. And whenever there was a fire, volunteer, the bell rang, and everybody, the volunteer department, run down and would take the first one down there, take the engine out, and the next one to get down there with some transportation was usually Buster Hoover. We had a 200-gallon tank, or 300-gallon tank, I forget which it was now, that he hooked his pickup on, and he come out to the fire for the next water tank. And while we were using the one tank, we'd fill up with his, and then he'd go back to the river or a place where he could fill quick with a and come back with another water. And I often said there's only one time that I can remember we run out of water on a fire like that, because we learned to use it sparingly and just where we had to, and which is a little different where now then the Embler Fire Department comes out with probably 5,000 gallons of water or something, and we had 200 to 300 at that time. And the
what time period was this, like?
Well, that was back in the 1940s. And another thing about the fire department, it was made up of donations at that time, and that was a time when money was pretty scarce. And I remember, I don't know what my dad and I gave to it, but it was probably $100, $10 to $100, maybe someplace in that. And I remember two parties, both of them were at Somerville. One was, I can't say her name right now, the other was a barber, Lot Elmer, and they'd get 50 cents and a dollar apiece for a donation of that fire engine. And that was big money for them. And there's no Social Security or Medicare or anything like that. And so that's just how things have changed. And the fact is, when I came back and started farming, we had that team of horses, and that's the way I started out. And those are kind of rough times. I remember once when I had one place with a nice crop of peas on it, and I bought another place and was serving on that crop of peas, paying for the down payment on that other place, and a hailstorm came along and cleaned out the pea field, and I had to go borrow some money, and I had a tough time borrowing it too to make the payment and not lose $1,000 I paid on that other place.
Yeah.
Another funny thing about this apple production that you might be interested in that I can remember one time we had a big apple crop here, and we bought $3,000 or $4,000 worth of apple boxes from Bowman Eggs, and we lost the crop, or it wasn't worth 10 cents a box, and I'd hold lots of apples out, thousands of boxes of apples out that were worth, and we never did get anything for them, but we couldn't even sell them, and we shipped apples all over the United States, you might say, and I finally found a broker in Waterloo, Iowa, that was a real nice fellow that he didn't try to cheat me. So we stayed with him for a number of years later, all right. And
so with the apple trees, who planted those trees?
They were planted before my time. Yeah, they're here. The one orchard that we had, the last orchard that is really commercial here in the county, is the one up at the foot of Mount Emily where Gary Webster lives. And we had that, I run that for, I imagine 20 years or better. And it is sod in the spring and lots of bluegrass, and I pasture my sheep up there, and they would prune the trees up as high as they could reach, and that was real good. And I'd take them out, and the dogs and the coyotes and the people moved in. First the coyotes and then the dogs with the neighbors give us trouble, and I finally sold the place and quit the apples entirely.
So with all the apples that were out on the outside of Emerald, what happened to all those trees, and like, why did those get taken out?
Well, that's really a good question, and it's one that I can really answer, because this place that I have down the road on Brooks Road, 70 acres there, that was in apples, and I took most of that out of apples myself after I bought it. And back in those days, we didn't have bulldozers and chainsaws. We did all with the old hand saws. And after we'd have a big tractor, John Morris, come in with his big International and a big heavy cable, and we would snake that onto the stump of the tree after it had been, the limbs had been cut off of it for firewood, and he'd pull it out. If he couldn't pull it one way, you'd unhook him, and he'd pull another way. And the roots that would break off, we'd take our small little tractor and hook onto those with a chain and pull them out so we could plow and work with it. All that apple wood went in for mostly for home fuel, and then it had kind of a good reputation for smoking meat. And the Don Myers and the Elephant smoked lots of meat for farmers at that time. And another little interesting story that I can tell you is about the Ruckmans. They were some of the big farmers south of Ambler, and they had usually a butcher 10 or 15 hogs for all their meat for the year, and had a big smokehouse, and he'd have to hire men for his harvest crew. It wasn't his team and horses and things like that then. And so he went, and somebody went and stole a lot of his hams and bacon out of his meat house one winter. And so he never said a word about it to anybody at all. And so sometime the next year at harvest time, one of the men had worked for him, he just worked as a part-time, and he said, "Well, Sam, did you ever find out who stole your meat?" And he said, "Yes, I did, just now." So there's a lot of little funny things that are a lot different than the things that happen now.
Yeah, tricky. You tricked them into telling them who.
Yeah.
So, did you ever work in, like, construction or anything? Like, did you ever build
buildings? No, I worked at the mill for about 3 years before I went to college. And then after I came out from college, I've been farming and busy. And the last, I retired when I was 70, and about 15, 18 years ago, Creston Shaw, Reem DeLint, Paul DeLint, and Paul Rudd, pardon me, Paul, on that one, that they've been handling my farm for the last several years, and I've sold some and given some to the college and 4-H and things like that, and have about 350 acres left that I get rent on, and that rent makes, the boys are doing a great job for me farming, and I'm real happy about it. So I just let them take it to the warehouse and I sell it, my part of it. All right.
So what was your favorite thing about farming? Like, what was your favorite crop? Or what did you like?
Well, I always liked the livestock and the sheep, and I had some of the best sheep dogs probably in the state of Oregon. They were just, you could tell them to do most anything, and they'd go out and do it for you. And I've had three or four during my lifetime, and I got them from as a pup and would train them then. And so I stuck with the livestock for a good many years, and I financially it would have been a lot better if I had one, if I went direct to farming out here in the valley instead of the cattle. And I had purebred Herefords and polled Herefords, and I just said the other yesterday to a party that was here, and I thought I had some of the best disposition and probably some of the best Herefords in the state of Oregon, although that was my idea, not everybody else's, because I trained them good and I took good care of them. I was never afraid to work in my lifetime. In fact, I probably handled more hay than most anybody else around. I had my own grass cleaner, and we cleaned our own grass until they came up and started bulking it instead of sacking it and like that, and did their own selling and a lot of those things. And I was in my warehouse down here, it's fixed up for sheep in the basement of it where they used to store apples. And the upstairs, we had a grass cleaning plant, and we have one hole about this big in the floor that everybody wondered about. And I finally just told someone what that floor and how come I never patched it up. But if I had a ewe that was lambing down in the basement and I was cleaning grass up above, I could put her in that little pen and I could look down up above down into the basement without having to make a trip down or clear her out to go down the little peephole. Was a good idea. And so I did lots of little funny things like that in my lifetime.
So how many sheep and cattle do you have?
Well, the most sheep that I'd ever had at a time was about 100 to 150, but I kind of cut it down to about 50 to 75 and about 40 to 50 head of cattle. And at one time I milked about 20 head of cows, but after two or three years of that, I found out I couldn't do everything I had to do with the responsibilities here I had at home with my folks and my sister, and trying to farm too and all this. And many of the people think it, or some of the younger folks think they have tough times. It's just like my sister, she lived to be 63 years old, and during those 63 years she was never able to go to bed, get up, go to the bathroom, take a bath or anything without being helped. But her mind and everything was great besides that. And so,
because her legs weren't, what was it?
They weren't connected. Her legs and her backbone weren't connected from birth. And so some of these folks who think they have a rough time, they need to kind of look around and see what is going on.
So were you ever involved in, like, the mayors or any kind of government in...
Well, yes, I have done quite a little bit and things like that. The ASC, the one here years ago, and they still have the offices up in the Island City, was in charge of the wheat programs and the livestock programs and everything like that. Oh, I was chairman of that committee for probably 20, 30 years, or a long time anyway, it was. And I was in the, in fact, we started up two or three from Amber and one or two from the Oregon, or down Willamette Valley. We were the first one that started up the Fescue Commission, and that's the one that we were promoting our grass seed that we were raising. And now then, at that time, the Wheat League was the only one that was promoting anything, and they had an active legislature. And so we found out that when we started to get ours fescue going, that we had to get all the legislature to pass the bill, and that was quite a little job. And so we finally decided, with the help of Paul Rowell, the State Department, that was about in the 1940s, late 40s, that and he's the one probably that came up with it, that we passed a bill that any agriculture commodities could go under this by meeting the specifications of it and having the vote of the growers and such. And now then there's 29 of those in the state of Oregon that are under that bill that we got passed.
They promote their crops?
Promote their crops. There's the potatoes and there's other seed crops. And the other thing is about that time is Portland had the time to reform that. And they had just two public relations companies there, and they only had one or two employees. And now then the public relations business in Portland, they're handling the Nike accounts, Pepsi-Cola, and all those. And they have this one company I know had over 800 employees in Portland handling Nike and Pepsi-Cola. And they had New York offices and Amsterdam offices and things like that. And so that just shows how these things can develop, it does.
What about, like, the interaction between the different towns? Do you remember, like, the sports going on between the different towns, like Union and Elgin and Amboy?
Well, it wasn't here because they didn't have the transportation for the teams to travel back at that time. My time in high school in LeGrand, there was, they had their city team, which played, I think about the only teams that they played were Baker and Pemberton, and but our high school, each class had three teams, intramural teams they called them, and I remember coming out there and playing against the Amber team, the kids that I'd went to grade school with, on that when I was a junior year, and then with four classes, and each class was three teams, they had their little league among their high school herself, and things were so different back in 1929. I've got it upstairs in the trunk, my college trunk, a football that they used it between the Oregon State and the University of Oregon football team. I found it in a treasure hunt that they had down there when we were at 4-H summer school. And back in those times, I think it was 4-H summer school. And back in those times, I think you only found it in a treasure hunt that they had down there when we were at 4-H summer school. And back in those times, I think they only had one football for the whole team, for the whole game, and such as that, a little different than the way those things are now. And I can remember yet where I found it. They evidently were doing a little project, walk project or something, and they had a pile of gravel that they dumped out of the truckload, and they put this football in, and it's pointed up real good as a cone, and up in the top that they buried this football, and you could just see a little bit of the lacing on the front of it, and that's where I found it. And I've got a little hatchet out there. I just, the handles broke on it as I won down at, in about 1929 or 30, the judging contest didn't appear or anything. So, like, I got a whole scads of things around the house here that are reminiscent of those times. And the 4-H just really opened the world up for the farm folks at that time, because at that time we only had a Model A car, Model T's, things like that. And